But first to the big story that broke on Thursday morning, described as Australia's most significant strategic decision since the ANZUS Treaty in 1951. And it certainly does feel as though AUKUS, this new trilateral security partnership with the US and the UK, might bequeath very important long-term repercussions. We just heard, for instance, today, France has taken the strongest diplomatic step available to it, recalling its ambassadors to the US and Australia, because they are so upset about tearing up the submarine deal. Now, next week here on Saturday Extra, we plan to look in more depth at the wider ramifications of these dramatic announcements to let the dust settle just a bit to enable some more understanding. What might it mean for our relationship with China? We'll also be speculating on major shifts underway there right now, which are perplexing observers. This week, we're keen to get a sense of how these shifts might play out politically in Australia. Phil Khoury's political editor at the Australian Financial Review, and he joins us now to share some of his initial thoughts and analysis. Phil, welcome back.
Good morning, Geraldine.
Did you have any sense that something like this was coming?
Not on this scale. My colleague, Andrew Tillett, at the Financial Review, he's probably been, he writes defence, foreign affairs, and has been, you know, the foremost in reporter in terms of covering the submarine contract, and he's been writing for some time that the government had been preparing this option to dump the French contract. That was based on it was rapidly turning into a Collins Mark II type thing, the Collins class sub thing, where it was blowing out in cost and in time and in the original sort of commitments that what work would be done in Adelaide was something going to be done in France. And it was the same sort of thing that happened with the Collins-class sub. So we'd had this, Andrew had been writing for quite a while that something was up and the government was preparing this bailout option, but what we couldn't quite work out what the plan B was, because just no one it just wasn't plausible to think we'd go nuclear. So that was the sort of final piece on Wednesday night, Thursday morning.
So when the announcement did arrive, what were your initial impressions? Because gradually we're learning, and I mean, I think it really bears quietly looking on for a bit, but one does get the impression that Scott Morrison himself was very much the driving force behind all this.
Yeah. Look, Geraldine, I think my reaction was like most other people. It was so large and multifaceted. It took some time to work out what to think of it. And as you said in your opening remarks, it's probably a good idea to have a look at it in a week's time when the dust settles, because there are so many sort of permutations and so forth from a domestic political level to what it means on the global scale. But I guess I was taken aback by from a domestic political level, it was a big coup for Morrison. I mean, regardless of what you think of the idea, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, to able to secretly corral the US and the British behind something as big as this, keep it secret for as long as they did, and then announce it in the fashion they did and catch not just Australia but the whole world off guard, is a fairly significant achievement. And as a few of us wrote, it now explains why Boris Johnson was added to that meeting Morrison had with Biden in Cornwall in June, on the sidelines of the G7, when everyone was bagging Morrison for being snubbed and, apparently because he didn't meet face-to-face with Joe Biden. This was a product of Biden snubbing Morrison because he didn't like him regarding climate change. And, of course, at the time the government was saying, look, we can't tell you why, but that's just not correct. And that's why. So, yeah, look, it went down very well inside the Liberal Party. There's been a lot of criticism of Scott Morrison from with his own ranks and inside the Liberal, the broader party, that he just doesn't make decisions. He spent the last 18 months fighting COVID and, being stomped on by the premiers and has had his authority diminished. So this gave that sense of decision-making and leadership back to the government. So it was quite a fillip at the domestic level, but internationally, goodness, it was just a big move, wasn't it? It was, it was branded as the biggest jump since ANZUS. I sort of see it as a massive step up from the 2011 pivot. Remember when Barack Obama just arrived in Australia one day with Julia Gillard and announced US Marines and bombers would be based in Darwin, and warships in Perth, and that was really the tripwire. This is now the, you know, the full picture.
Look, what I don't quite understand is this largely because they, not largely, but getting out of the French contract was clearly a major driving force, I take it.
Yes.
Am I reading this correctly? That there was a desire to get out of the French contract was going bad, and I've been reading things about that. Hmm. But to move to this level and the whole sort of leap to nuclear power, and I don't even recall a particular discussion about that, but apparently that really began under Abbott, I now discover.
Yes.
To me, I'm missing something.
Yes, I think we all are a bit. You're right. Tony Abbott remember, he ordered submarines from the Japanese, and they were off-the-shelf subs. And then he got into trouble internally because, there was this political backlash because, you know, Christopher Pyne and others demanded they be built at home. And then, Abbott had this competitive evaluation process, and then it just all got really confusing and terrible. Then Malcolm Turnbull knocked him off and did the deal with the French. And then in about 2017, Abbott said, look, we really should just stop messing around here. And I read it the other day, it's quite a well-argued piece, just buy off-the-shelf nuclear submarines from the Americans. He was still in Parliament then. That was seen as him trying to destabilise the leadership. It was actually Maurice Payne, you know, led the charge to, you know, give him a slap down. So that was really the first and last mention of nuclear. I think Malcolm Turnbull wrote in his biography that published last year that the benefit of the French submarines was they actually were designed as nuclear submarines. So if and when Australia was prepared to accept a nuclear industry, we could convert them, you know, basically plonk reactors in them. But that was really the be-all and end-all of it. I suspect Geraldine, you know, the Prime Minister's not being as forthcoming publicly as he might, as, you know, one of the reasons they wanted to junk this contract was because of the uncertainty and the blowouts and all the disagreement that was going on. But his stated reasons were that since 2016, the threat in the region had grown markedly, that these French subs would not be fit for purpose in terms of range and what they were supposed to do.
But
and
the French subs were nuclear anyway.
That's right.
And they were being converted back. So, I mean, this is what I mean.
I know. Well, the other argument, and I'm getting out of my own depth of expertise here, but what they're telling us is that the new generation, next generation reactors, the Americans use, can be put in the submarine at the time of manufacture, and you don't touch them, you don't refuel them, they don't need any servicing, unlike the French ones. And if we were to use the French reactors, we would have to break our moratoria on a civil nuclear industry to maintain and fuel them.
Right.
That's,
okay.
Now, look, that's a pretty, given we're talking something that's not going to happen for 15 years, but that's the argument anyway.
Look,
I suspect they just wanted to get away from the French and go back into the bosom of the old allies.
I mean, there's an interesting remark by Rory Medcalf, the head of the National Security College, yesterday, which struck fear into me. It said basically that the nation will have to then look at implementation, cost, timelines, capability, workforce education, and this is the phrase, and a sea change in the way our defence bureaucracy has traditionally done business. Now, that is a very considerable ask, isn't it?
Mm. on a number of fronts, yes. And I think the other thing to point out, though, not to get too fixated just on the submarines, because the announcement was so much bigger than those. The submarines are really just a down payment on what really happened. The Prime Minister said, both publicly and privately, that the subs are just the start of it. If you remember, if you go back a few years when the Abbott government was elected, they said, we're going to boost defence spending back to 2% of GDP, because that was the requirement that Washington was putting on its allies, you know, so, because Washington was sick and tired of carrying the cost burden of keeping the region, you know, safe. And we hit that 2% some time ago, and Morrison basically said, that's now just a floor. He said, yeah, the elevator's going to go up, not down from here, and the subs are just part of that. And he also announced on the day things like, you know, buying cruise missiles and all sorts of things. Mm. And back to the capability gap that we'll have until these subs come online. They're talking about drones and all sorts of things under the ocean. So we're, you know, it sort of reeks of a Reagan era type, you know, spend on defence.
Okay.
You know?
So let me ask you two things really then. I wonder how you judge the Australian people will receive this, because it was a shock.
Mm.
It was a big shock.
Yes.
And in the middle of a pandemic, you know, it's another. We're already in sort of shock after shock. So it certainly breaks the notion of a cautious people watching, looking on. I just wonder how you feel it'll be received. And Labor, where does it's tricky for Labor in the middle of this, isn't it?
Very, I'll take the second one. Very tricky because, I mean, Labor is, you know, it was Curtin who founded the alliance. Menzies sort of signed our ANZUS, but it has its foundations in John Curtin, and Labor is very proud of that legacy, the US alliance. And I don't think they had a problem. Well, the nuclear thing was a problem, and you know, Anthony Albanese had a very quick caucus meeting on the morning, and yeah, and they accepted that the nuclear submarines, based on the caveats the Prime Minister gave, that it wouldn't, you know, there wouldn't be nuclear weapons and it wouldn't spawn a broader nuclear industry in Australia. So on that proviso, they support it. But, you know, you can see even Paul Keating was very opposed to it. Kevin Rudd believes it's going to make us more vulnerable.
It was very interesting, I thought, on 7:30, Kevin Rudd.
Yeah, so the sort of Labor luminaries, if you like, the former Prime Ministers aren't enamoured of it, but the current, Anthony Albanese, Richard Marles, whatever, sort of support it. And again, you know, because Julia Gillard really, you know, pulled the trigger on this, if you like, in a contemporary sense by signing the pivot with Obama, that really, you know, that we're talking about bombers and US warships and even US submarines using Australian ports, that has its origins in that. So I suspect Labor will, not advocate it, get out in front of it. As for the Australian people, Geraldine,
you think they will or won't advocate it, did you say?
I think they'll support it, but they won't advocate it. It's not their thing, but they won't undermine it either because they were cautiously supportive. As for voters, who knows? I mean, there's that element that strongly dislikes Morrison will just dislike him anyway. And I read some theories that it was a distraction from the Christian Porter business.
Well, that was my last question going to be. I mean, that's the other sort of rumbling.
It's a pretty big ask to get the US president and the British prime minister poison the relationship with France.
I mean, just how did you see that playing out? Because that was obviously running. There were two big political stories this week.
Yeah, well, look, that's a terrible look. I mean, I think actually the reason they've pushed Porter into the long grass for a few days is because they didn't want that to distract from the submarines. I think it's the other way around because that sub announcement was always coming. Porter, I suspect, will be dealt with in the next few days, possibly while the Prime Minister's abroad, but from what I understand, he's sort of pushing back a bit. And if we're talking about, you know, leadership, I think the Prime Minister just has to show it. I mean, it's one thing to say, to get my department to give me some advice, whether this is a bad look or not for a minister, I don't think there's much ambiguity regarding that. And Christian Porter has three options. He either gives the money back, discloses who gave it to him, or he walks. And I suspect it may be the latter at this stage.
All right, Phil. I think we'll have you back certainly before the end of the year to see how the dust has settled. I think there's a lot. Well, I think it takes a great deal of comprehension, really, to work
out. It does. I'm still working out what I think about everything, I must admit. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Phil.
Pleasure.
Phil Khoury, the political editor at the Australian Financial Review, and do let us know, as you already are, what you think. It's certainly challenging all round.